Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. There have been changes to Pennsylvania's driving under the influence of alcohol or drug laws in the past decade. The minimum blood alcohol level to be considered intoxicated was lowered to 0.08, and repeat offenders were required to have ignition locks installed on their vehicles that would prevent the vehicles from starting if the driver had alcohol on their breath. Even with those changes, Pennsylvania is considered to have some of the most lenient drunk driving laws in the country, especially for repeat offenders. But there are proposals to change that. Joining us on today's program, Republican State Senator John Rafferty. Senator Rafferty, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. My honor to be on.
Also joining us, Lancaster County District Attorney Craig Stedman. District Attorney Stedman, thanks for being with us, too.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we're joined in the studio by Chris and Susan Demko, one of the co-founders of Pennsylvania Parents Against Impaired Driving. Mr. Demko, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Chris and Susan, I want to start by telling us your story. You lost your daughter, Meredith, 4 years ago in a crash that was just a few days after she had graduated from Lampeter Strasburg High School in Lancaster County. First of all, I think that the entire audience would agree that sorry for your loss. It doesn't seem like enough to say, but always thinking about the sympathy for your loss of Meredith. These are painful memories, but can you tell us what happened that night?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's very odd when you think about it. Meredith was coming home from the Y on Tuesday, July 8th, and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a repeat drunk and drugged driver crashed into her car, and the impact was so great that her ribs crushed her lungs, and she suffocated while in her car. And I remember getting the call from the policeman at work, and he had said to me, Mrs. Demko, you need to come to the hospital. Meredith has been in an accident. Please come to the emergency room. So I hung up, and I called Chris, because Chris was about 2 hours away in New Jersey that day. And I remember telling Chris that Meredith had been in an accident and that he needed to come home. And we had no idea. I still remember when I was in the emergency room after seeing Meredith, and I asked the doctor, was the other driver killed as well? And he said, I'm sorry, I can't give you that information. And then we went home after seeing Meredith.
When you say you saw Meredith,
yes.
Was she still alive at that point?
No.
Were you told when she got there that she had passed?
Yes. And that was another odd thing. It was after speaking to the police officer on the phone, he was very clear, and he said to me, Mrs. Demko, do you understand me? And I said, yes. So when I got to the hospital, I went to the reception area in the emergency room, and I told the receptionist who I was, and his face went white. And I was then greeted by the chaplain, and I said to the chaplain, I'm sorry, I don't need a chaplain. I need to see the doctor. And at that moment, the doctor came in and told me that upon arrival, Meredith was dead, to the hospital. And after speaking to the police officers, they had said to us, the impact was so great that in her car, when her ribs went through her lungs, she suffocated and died in her car.
Chris, you were 2 hours away. That trip must have been incredible.
It was horrible. Because I know I said, Susan, call me from the hospital. And I knew she never called, and I knew why. I mean, it was obvious. She wasn't calling me, so I assumed the worst. But it was a tough drive.
So when did you find out that the other driver was drunk, and as it turned out, also had heroin in his system? When did you find that out?
I believe the same day. That night, a police officer came to our home, and I identified who the other driver was. And that's when we learned that he was drunk, and then we did not know about the heroin until a little time later, that he had heroin in his system as well.
Yeah, tox screen, I guess.
And he was also driving on a suspended license.
Right, yes. And that he was a repeat offender.
Absolutely.
Correct.
So the thoughts and emotions going through your mind, you're obviously grieving the loss of your daughter, but at the same time, you probably were angry at what you had learned. I mean, I hate to ask how angry, but I mean, how did that come out? I mean, what did you think at that point?
Well, you know, the immediate reaction when the police officer is telling you that this individual is known in the community to be a problem, and he was driving on a suspended license. As I've said before, we were naive, in all honesty. Why would somebody be driving on a suspended license? Why would there be
at
a
the very least?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
And so there was anger, there was frustration. And then over the next subsequent days, just reading the paper, you come to find out that this is a common occurrence. It happens a lot. Right before Meredith was killed, I think 6 months before, there was another horrible crash similar to ours with a repeat offender in Lancaster County. There was one maybe a year before that. So we became very frustrated, and we came to the realization that the laws are not adequate here and there needs to be improvement.
So how did you put that anger and that decision into motion?
What we realized or found out after Meredith was killed, the community was excellent. People we didn't know contacted us. We got countless letters. And we became, you could call outrage, or it's unacceptable about DUI. And we wrote a letter to the editor. We were just expecting just a letter thanking people and then also to say focus on DUI legislation. And there was an interlock bill that was out there that we learned about. We wrote a letter to the editor thinking it was just going to be a letter and ended up being on the front page, top of the Sunday morning paper. And I think the legislators responded locally, and that was kind of the start of it. Mm.
So, Craig Stebbin, you're the district attorney of Lancaster County, and you were at that time, too. The man who killed Meredith Demko, and I have no problem using the guy's name, but I don't want to bring it up and rather even mention it. But the man who killed Meredith Demko had two other drunk driving offenses, and he was driving with a suspended license. First of all, he should not have been on the road to begin with, but he was charged with third-degree murder. Can you explain why that charge rather than some others?
Yeah, so the typical charge for a DUI when you kill someone is homicide by vehicle by DUI, and that's a felony of the second degree. So your maximum penalty there is 5 to 10 years, and the mandatory is 3 years. But there are certain cases that are so egregious, like this one, that warrant a third-degree murder charge. Now, that becomes a much higher burden for us. And what that does is expand the maximum penalty for him significantly, for the offender significantly, and it gives a lot more weapons for us to protect the community for these repeat offenders in particular. But in his case, you have to look at the facts. You have to establish what's known as malice under the law in order to establish third-degree murder. And malice is not, it's not traditionally, most people think that that's, you know, an evil person sitting there having an evil plot or something like that. It's criminal malice, which is extreme recklessness, and we have to prove that in court. Now, doing that in Pennsylvania is difficult, to say the least. There are cases all over the map with this facts and these facts and facts A and facts B and facts C, and we have no great roadmap. So it's definitely, to me, it's a problem. problem for us in the law. But the factors that were the main factors in this particular case that warranted the charge were obviously he had been convicted of DUI before. He had been through the system. If he had no idea about the dangers of DUI, he certainly did now. So he's under that. Chris had mentioned that he had been suspended. And in this case, the driving really when it was over the top. I mean, it was horrific driving. He was speeding, driving off the road for about a mile beforehand. The people in the car were pleading with him to slow down. And we had people, other drivers were honking their horns at him. He had seen a police officer back, and we can presume he felt like he had to flee that police officer because he had used heroin and he was drinking vodka. And so he was under the influence. He was impaired. He got the horrible driving and the actual notice by the people in the car begging him to not do this, to slow down and stop. So that gave us a pretty solid case for malice, for criminal malice. Unfortunately, you know, it's not the only case like this, and sometimes we don't have maybe the one fact that's going to work out, and it becomes quite a challenge for us, and I really appreciate the courage of the Demcos to channel their loss into trying to make some positive change, because unfortunately, you know, there are so many other families out there. Somebody's dying almost every day in Pennsylvania from a DUI-related crash, and the numbers just keep going up, and of course, they're not numbers. These are people. You know, Meredith had just graduated, and she had her life ahead of her, and it's just a horrible, horrible case, and you know, we were fortunate to get the result, but the better result is to prevent it, obviously.
Chris, quickly, just so our listeners have a sense, if they're familiar with the area, where did this occur?
This occurred on Lampeter Road, which was about a mile from our house. She had left the Y, which was down just a mile and a half. And she was just coming up Lampeter Road, which is the road a lot of us take every day.
So she was only a mile away from home.
Yes, that close.
Senator Rafferty, want to go down through the laws that Pennsylvania has right now. In Pennsylvania, first offense DUI, no jail time. Now, I should preface this right up front, that a lot of this depends on the level of alcohol in the system, so take that into account. But first offense, no jail time. Second, 5 days in jail. In Pennsylvania, DUI stays on your record for 10 years. After that, it can be expunged. No required license suspension, again, depending on the level of alcohol, and not an automatic felony. Those laws are considered some of the weakest in the country. Now, we're going to talk about what your remedies are, but how do we get to this point that PA has such weak drunk driving laws?
I hate to put it this way, but I think it goes back to some of the bygone days where if somebody was driving drunk and they were pulled over, it was get in the car, I'll take you home type thing, and it was not looked upon as serious as we see it today. Particularly when you hear the Demco story, you're moved to tears and to action. And I think that was a lot of what was going on in the legislature's mind at that time. When I came in, Scott, I started to work on, I was chairman of Law and Justice, and I started to work on binge drinking and underage drinking and the problems with that, and start to take a very aggressive stand on changing laws there and working with people like Craig Stedman. And then when I moved to transportation, I was determined that we were going to strengthen our DUI legislation and again, working with Craig Stedman and having hearings and hearing Chris and Susan's story firsthand and a number of other people involved in their organization, that we were going to toughen those laws. It was time for Pennsylvania to recognize the dangers of people getting behind the wheel of a car who are driving under the influence.
And we're going to talk about some of those incremental steps in just a moment and what you are proposing right now. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We were talking about whether DUI should be a felony in Pennsylvania, and there's some other parts of it. Senate Bill 961 that addresses drunk driving laws in Pennsylvania. Our guests today, Chris and Susan Demko, co-founders of Pennsylvania Parents Against Impaired Driving, Republican State Senator John Rafferty, and Lancaster County District Attorney Craig Stedman. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Senator Rafferty, you mentioned that this became one of your priorities in the Senate. We have had incrementally some laws here in Pennsylvania that have changed over the last decade or so. The blood alcohol level, the minimum for being considered intoxicated, went down to 0.08. With the help of the DEMCO's organization, there was a law enacted a few years ago in Pennsylvania, something we didn't think was going to happen. That was that repeat offenders, that there would be ignition locks put on their vehicles, that they'd have to breathe into it, and if they had alcohol in their breath, couldn't start. So there have been some changes. But why does it seem to take so long, and why just incrementally? And I know we can go back to not being taken seriously, but I think that, you know, the legislature and most people realize it is a serious offense now. Why does it seem like it has to go step by step by step?
I wish I could answer that, Scott, in a direct fashion. I don't know. It took 5 years to get the ignition interlock for first-time offenders across the finish line. 5 years, and thank God that Chris and Susan showed up to help us out to get that piece of legislation through the House of Representatives, well, always passed the Senate, through the House of Representatives and to the governor's desk, so it became law. And I've continued to have hearings to highlight the importance of toughening our driving under the influence laws here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, to educate my colleagues and people in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I believe, and Craig is has worked with us very closely. I believe the Senate has gotten the full grasp of it and has worked very hard in passing legislation in that regard. And I think our colleagues in the House, along with people like Keith Greiner and some of those who want to help us out, that they're starting to convince their colleagues over in the House the importance of this legislation as well. And I'm not taking anything away from them. They're just not focusing on it like they should be. I think they're beginning to focus on it as they should be.
Along those lines, and I do want to get to 961, but Chris, Chris had mentioned something to me ahead of time about the speed of which legislation goes through the legislature. And I think it's a good example of sometimes priorities. Chris?
Yeah, what we've learned, you know, we've been involved with three sessions now. What you find, some legislation becomes a hot piece because it's a current event or it's a maybe a special interest and it moves quickly. There was a bill that was introduced last year for secondary metals, which is copper piping or, you know, in utility lines, stuff like that. Well, that bill was introduced, and within 6 months it passed. It created a felony if you steal metals $1,000 or more. So, you know, so the legislative body moves that really quickly. Then this year there's an anti-hazing bill because of the horrible situation up at Penn State. But that bill was introduced in March. It's on the verge of being passed by the second body. So it's March to now June, and there's another piece of legislation, the animal cruelty bill, all for it. These bills, I'm not against them at all. But that bill was introduced and passed. It's now a felony. So you have property rights that have a felony concept. So if you steal somebody's property, that's worth more value. It's more valuable than a human life. Well, that's really frustrating, as you can tell from my tone.
Senator, I'm not going to have you answer for the entire Senate or the entire legislature, but when you see something like that, that can be frustrating as a constituent, as a Pennsylvanian.
It is, Scott. In fact, I'm frustrated right now. We passed by overwhelming majority in the Senate what we'll get to very shortly, Senate Bill 961, and had assurances from one or two House members that they were going to champion it over in the House, and it's still sitting in committee over there. This is a bill that we originated, Ryan Boot, my chief of staff, and Nolan Ritchie, who's executive director of transportation, worked on very closely with Craig Stedman, the DA's association, based upon what the DEMCOs have had to go through and other people have had to go through here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It is an absolute, positive, life-saving, life-changing bill if we can get it through the House and get it to the governor. It's one of those that that law enforcement, that the DEMCO's group, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, all those are in favor of, and yet it's still sitting in the House of Representatives. And I'm asking Representative Greiner and the rest of those people that said that they would help to get involved and get that bill out of committee and onto the House floor.
Mm. We'll take a phone call from Brian in Elizabethtown. Brian, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to
Unfortunately, Brian, we're losing your phone call. I want to pass this along, what Brian was going to talk about, because I think it's important. He said he knows someone who stops at bars and drives drunk frequently, also has his license suspended. The big question is, how do we stop him? Craig Stedman, how?
Well, I mean, the specific question he's talking about, somebody needs to notify the police. I mean, there's so many that when we look at the DUI numbers, which are staggering, you have to accept the fact that there are tons of other ones that we didn't catch the person, that people are doing this, you know, all the time. I mean, it's something like 70,000 people or something like that are driving each day on a suspended license, and we have countless DUIs that we just don't. So if he knows somebody that's perpetrating something, and we need that, the police need that information. I mean, the other aspect of that, that where Senator Rafferty has been a great proponent of, along with Senator Martin and Keith Greiner, and but they've been stonewalled, is getting some real meaningful changes to our laws. And what really didn't come out, and they're talking about making a felony, let me just back that up and explain it. Right now, unless you kill somebody in Pennsylvania, you can commit DUI after DUI after DUI after DUI after DUI, and it remains a misdemeanor. But if you go into a store, you go to Walmart or whatever, and you steal a pen three separate occasions, that's actually a felony because of the graduated penalties. We don't have anything like that in Pennsylvania, so, of course, nobody dies when you steal a pen. And it's just out completely illogical. It's out of balance, and what we'd like to see and what the bill calls for is a third offense, DUI within the 10 years turns it to a felony of the third degree. I mean, that's just a fundamental thing to me. I think we're one of only four states in the entire country that doesn't have a felony for repeat DUI offenders. It's just unacceptable. And will it solve the problem in and of itself? No, there's no magic bullet. We have to deal with things on a comprehensive scale. I mean, there's addiction issues and all those things, but it certainly is something that, you know, I just can't believe, and I've been calling for this for 10 years. I don't know what the answer is. I know the senator gave his things to me. It just seems to be there's a thought process that people just say it's just a DUI until you have something like the DEMCOs, and then people hear the speech, and then I just don't know what happens. And from my point of view, certainly frustrating, but do appreciate the leadership that John's given in trying to get this bill passed.
So just explain. I think everyone probably has an idea, but just to put it into words, Craig, why is it important in your mind that this be made a DUI, a felony?
There's the penalty aspect for the individual, and then there's the messaging. I mean, I think it just has to be, we want to send the message that we're taking DUI laws, particularly repeat offenders, seriously in Pennsylvania, because we don't. Depending on which study you look at, we're 45th or 48th, the weakest, most lenient in the entire country. And we shouldn't, I mean, that's completely unacceptable, and it's completely unacceptable because people are dying as a result of this. And we need to focus on, you know, those repeat offenders. I think it's something like 40% of our DUI fatalities are repeat offenders. And that's something I think people can coalesce around and say, let's target these people. They've been given the opportunity. Typically, people get ARD, which is just essentially probation and a fine on their first offense, which is extremely lenient, but they've been through the system. And then they come back, and then we see things like this where someone's dead. These cases are entirely preventable. And you know, no one's forcing anybody to get behind the wheel of a car while they're impaired with drugs or alcohol or a combination. So some of it's messaging, some of it's penalty, which allows the judges and allows us to put people who keep doing it, incarcerate them for longer if we need to. But right now, you know, we're limited because it's always going to be a misdemeanor until they kill somebody, and then, of course, then it's too late.
Senator, so let's talk about Senate Bill 961. What would it do?
Senate Bill 961, thank you for that. And by the way, Craig was right. I want to give a shout-out to Senator Scott Martin, who has been terrific in his not only offering comment about the bill, but his support, and Senator Andy Dinneman from Chester County as well, where the two of us had a fatality very similar, where a firefighter was on his way home, volunteer firefighter from a fire, and was killed by drunk driver, repeat offender. So these type of situations, we figured we had to do something. We wanted to do something. So this bill will make a first ever DUI for a person convicted of a third DUI. As Craig had said, with a blood alcohol content of 0.16 or higher, and the fact that we're creating the felony, we're the first. I think we're the fourth state in the union that doesn't have a felony DUI, and it does send a message, I think, loud and clear to those people that continue to drink and get behind the wheel that this is no longer going to be treated as a slap on the wrist, or okay, we're going to do your 90-day suspension, then you'll go back. It's a felony. It's a felony. And that on your record alone, I think, will be a proactive measure in getting through to some of these people the danger of it. Also increases the minimum term of imprisonment for a person who unintentionally causes the death of another person while intoxicated. It's unintentionally causes the death of the person, but they're getting behind that wheel knowing that they are drunk. And the minimum sentence would increase from 3 years. So right now, you get a 3-year behind bars. Minimum sentence for driving a vehicle and killing someone while you're drunk, whether it's your third offense or your seventh offense. But this now will change that. So from 3 to 5 years if the person has a prior DUI, and from 3 to 7 years if the offender has 2 or more DUIs. And even with that, Scott, I had people in the Senate vote against it because they don't like mandatories. Well, we think that there has to be, and I agree with Craig on this, there has to be a hard message sent to these people that are getting behind the wheel of the car and those that have had offenses already for DUI and convictions for DUI, getting behind the wheel of a car and threatening people, or in the instance of, Sue and Chris, the death of a family member. So we're trying to send this message loud and clear for them. It also increases penalties for repeat offenders, and it prohibits, this was, I think, an interesting one, it was added, prohibits the adult driver required to accompany a person driving on a learner's permit from being impaired to agree that they endanger themselves or others. We've had instances where police have found people giving lessons and riding with someone with a learner's permit who have been under the influence as well.
My guess is, and not making light of this, there probably are people who think, oh, I have a legal driver now. I can get drunk and they can drive home. Anyway, Senator, one question before we take some phone calls, because we have some important questions here. You said 1.6. That's twice the legal limit.
Right.
That seems like a high bar. Now, I don't know how many drinks 1.6 blood alcohol level it takes to get to 1.6, but that seems like a high bar.
Well, that's a third-tier offense, and that's what makes it the felony DUI in Pennsylvania, the 0.16. So.
Well, I say that when I say a high bar, meaning that doesn't seem – it seems like you would have to get really drunk to be even considered for a felony at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thank God I've never had that, so I don't know.
Well, I just wondered how you arrived at that figure rather than something lower.
Well, the 0.16, it's a third-tier frame now in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and it always has been that.
Right,
so we just took it right out of the statute for that.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's take some phone calls. Hilda is in Lancaster, and she has an important question. Hilda, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi,
everybody, and thank you for being there. And I would like to let Stedman know right up front, I'm on my way to visit you one of these days. I was just wondering, when it comes to Pennsylvania, everything that we're hearing about the high opiates and other things, and high drive and growing meth problem. I have someone very dear to me that drives a lot and with a child in the car. And I was just wondering, besides alcohol, that she claims that is her problem, besides when she's intoxicated with alcohol, there are other things that she could be intoxicated with, and I would like to know what we do and what our hardworking officers do when they stop someone that they have noticed is absolutely impaired in some way, and they approach the person and the little cutesy face lets them know, I'm not drinking. How do you, how do we tell, or what do we do when it's obvious that there is an impairment but it's not alcohol.
Thank you very
much. And there is a child in the car.
Hilda, thank you very much for your call. And that is a very, very important question. Craig Stittman, let me put it to you first. I mean, because I know we've had this conversation. You are seeing this more and more, not just in Lancaster County, but across the state, this entire country with the opioid crisis that we have, that people are getting high and getting behind the wheel of a car. I imagine it's much more difficult to realize whether someone is stoned on a drug rather than you're not smelling alcohol. What about that? How much of a problem is it? And how is it measured? And what can be done about it?
Right. So it is a huge problem. And she brings up a great point that we're facing just as a county, as a state, and as a country, is dealing with the opioid abuse. And there's one thing that hardly ever gets mentioned when you talk about it is the DUIs and the danger to everybody on the roadways when these people are, you know, impaired from heroin or fentanyl or whatever it is that they're taking. And when I started here many years ago, you could count on one hand how many DUIs were related to some type of drugs. And I think it was over 600 we had, the last number I had. That's just the ones that we caught. So some of the unique things that we have here is something called a drug recognition expert. We have police officers who went through an extensive training in school that they can look for clues with the body and on the person, with the eyes, and they have a better idea and the ability to tell if they suspect somebody is under the influence and it's not alcohol. So that's a great step that we have, and we have officers that go all over the county to help out with that. They have specialized training for that. And of course, the other thing that we'd need to get is a blood test. So we've got to develop enough evidence to get that test done, but that's ultimately the way that we're going to do it. But the unique tool that we have, the frontline tool, is those drug recognition experts. And how many we have about five in the county of those officers.
I don't know, that sounds like kind of a hit or miss.
Well, they'll be called out. So anybody can call them out. I mean, part of it is the collaborative efforts of their willingness to come out and look. But yeah, of course, it's definitely hit or miss, and it is much more challenging than before to find out. And of course, you have to wait for a confirmatory blood test, which isn't going to come back right away. So you know, breathalyzer isn't going to work, ignition interlock isn't going to work on those drug people. It presents an entirely new challenge. So just as we're catching up with the rest of the country with ignition interlock, we've presented, you know, what presents itself now is the opioid abuse and other drugs. It's not just that. I mean, you know, marijuana as well, and you impaired by a cornucopia of drugs are out there for people to use, and unfortunately people get behind the wheel of a car, either a mixture or not, and they're risking everybody's life.
Chris, now, one of the things we're, to follow up on Craig's comments, one of the things we're wrestling with right now and discussing is we've legalized marijuana for medical purposes, prescription from the doctor and so forth. What happens if somebody's driving with prescription marijuana? So certainly, Craig's right. I mean, they can't be driving impaired, but it's a situation that there's what ifs coming up within the legislature on that type of thing too. So it's always a situation where I work very closely with the DAs and take their lead on many of these type of instances.
Now, the medical marijuana though does not impair the driver, but it will be in their system, correct?
It will be in your system. We would hope it wouldn't impair the driver, but we're waiting for that one time when somebody may have gone a little too far. We don't know. So
okay. Chris and Susan, when you found out the man involved in Meredith's crash had heroin in his system as well, I mean, did you get any kind of explanation about whether that made his level of intoxication even higher? I mean, from what was described with, you know, driving, the way Craig Stedman described what the guy was doing, it seemed like either he had to be really, really drunk or the combination of the two.
I would just say the BAC, I believe, was three times.
Okay, so he was drunk enough.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then heroin on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about Senate Bill 961 and drunk driving laws here in Pennsylvania, some of the weakest in the country. Our guest today, Chris and Susan Demko, co-founders of Pennsylvania Parents Against Impaired Driving, Lancaster County District Attorney Craig Stedman, and Republican State Senator John Rafferty. And Senator Rafferty, I know you have to head off to a hearing or another meeting here in a few minutes, so we'll let you go in just a few minutes, but do want to take another phone call. By the way, our phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@WITF.org. On WITF's Facebook page, you can leave a question or a comment. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Fred in Carlisle. Fred, you're on the air.
Yes. My comment is based upon my background, both in criminal law and as a criminologist. And research in the past had shown that the severity of potential penalties is not a very effective deterrent. So the banning about of the word weak laws isn't really going to help. The effective deterrent is the likelihood of being caught. And I would emphasize to the legislature that that is where they should place their emphasis. Now, I know that there's issues about civil liberties, but if we want to reduce the likelihood of people driving drunk or under the influence, that is where they should put their emphasis.
Thank you very much for your comment. Senator, what about that?
Well, we look at all the aspects. I mean, certainly we look at the penalty phase of it. We also look at, and we just did a huge packet of bills under the Corbett administration, Justice Reinvestment, where you offer alternatives for people for treatment. But I really feel, and I hear what the man's saying, but I really feel the fact that we've upgraded the DUI to a felony is going to have that deterrent on people, that they know getting behind the wheel of the car, they're facing a longer jail term if they should injure someone or bring death to someone, or if they're caught for a third time or over, it's a felony conviction. So I hear what the man's saying, but there are a number of us, too, that who feel that this is the right way to go.
Senator John Rafferty, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. And if I could, to the Demkos, thank you for everything, Chris and Susan and Craig Stebbin. They're a real great combination to work with, and we make a very effective team, and I'm very appreciative of their efforts.
And thank you, Senator Rafferty. He's been a great champion. I don't know of a senator up there that has done as much to protect the citizens as John has done.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Thank you, Senator. Craig Stedman, I want to fall back to the last caller a little bit. What he was, I assume what he's talking about with more, you know, more people out. I think he's talking about more police officers out there. Is that possible?
Well, it's certainly possible. Obviously, the taxpayer is going to have to pay for that. I think that I just would fundamentally disagree that you have to have increased penalties for people that keep repeating the offense. I mean, there has to be a message, there has to be a consequence, and you don't know who you save because you increased the penalty and locked up a repeat DUI offender for longer than he would have been locked up before. There's incapacitation there as well. I don't disagree that we want deterrence. Deterrence is the greatest solution. I mean, the best statistic you're ever going to see is one that doesn't take place because we deterred somebody. But the way you deter somebody is by having some penalties. They know it's going to be taken seriously. Pennsylvania is not known for taking DUI seriously. It's getting a little bit better due to the efforts of Rafferty and others. But we're still, you know, we've got DUS guys that are under suspension that basically just keep doing it and doing it and doing it because there isn't any real consequence for the most part, and that's part of this bill. I think the other thing that you know I've suggested for many years, you want deterrence. Let's talk about forfeiture of a vehicle for a repeat DUI offender. I mean, that's the weapon that they're using. If they keep going back and doing it again, and you can debate as to whether it's a second offense or a third offense, but you want to deter people. Right now, people think for the most part they're right for first offense, they end up paying a fine if they get a DUI, and if they're wealthy enough, it's not a big deal. I've gotten letters from multiple defendants who said, who were repeat offenders, who actually wrote to me and said if they had been taken more seriously the first time they were in the system, they would never have gone back, because they just wrote a check out basically and it was done. Now, so that's a great debate that I think has to go, but I think one of the things that we should do is look at forfeiting the vehicle, the instrument, the weapon. I mean, we forfeit things for all kinds of things in Pennsylvania, but that's I mean, to me, that would be an attention grabber. And people could say, like, okay, well, you make it a third offense, you forfeit. Well, at least maybe they'd stop after two. And right now, you know, it just the penalties are just not enough. It's not working enough. Now, we're not obviously going to be able to just incarcerate our way out of this, but it has to be an aspect. Enforcement has to be an aspect, and we need to be sending the right message, and particularly against the repeat offenders.
Let's take Mike in Harrisburg. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, folks. I've been listening to this, and it always amazes me. In the case of a firearm, if somebody has even a minor nonviolent felony, they lose their right to purchase or own a firearm forever.
Okay, so your point is... Yeah, just
wait. So my point is here, I've worked with alcoholics. Alcoholics have to drink. They're going to drink, they have to drink, because if they don't drink, they have to be hospitalized. That said, to me, it looks very simple that when you get somebody that's a diagnosed alcoholic, they need to be incarcerated forever until the point is they can be deemed no longer alcoholic. And if that means they have to spend 10 years clean in jail, I think it's a modest proposal.
Mm. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Craig, I'll have you respond to that in just a moment, but I want to add something that's kind of related. I've got an email here from a listener who says, not for a second would I dare minimize the importance of law enforcement for impaired driving, but you can lock people up as long as you want, as many times as you want, and nothing will happen unless they get rehabilitation. They'll be out after months or years and go right back to drinking or using substances unless they get rehabilitation. If you're going to lock people up, you must insist they undergo intensive rehabilitation. And I wanted to follow up with your last answer. For many people, it is a choice. Most people, it is a choice to drink, get high, get behind the wheel of a car. But in the case of an alcoholic, someone who is addicted to drugs, in many cases, they can't help it. So where does that fit into the equation here?
Well, I mean, you know, that's obviously part of the complicated issue that we're facing. And I think everybody, you have to individualize the sentences for the cases that you have. So you're going to deal with somebody who is truly an addict or an alcoholic a little bit. You're going to look at it a little bit differently as far as where they're going to go and what we want to do with them than somebody that says they were out at a party and they've never gotten drunk before and they did it. And there's no excuse for either one of them. But one of the nice things about, you know, increasing the penalties is we have better rehabilitation programs in the state prison system than we do in the counties. The counties aren't built for that. And as you and I have talked before, if you're truly addicted to drugs, it takes your brain, like heroin, it takes your brain about 270 days to have a chance to have rehabilitation. So you're talking about a long period of time. Now, with the other caller talking about a 10-year sentence for an alcoholic, I mean, it has to pass, and it has to be something that's going to get through. And that's not—it's not going to get through. I mean, we don't get 10-year sentences for hardly anything. And so that's just—it's not realistic. I think, you know, you could solve a lot of problems by locking your population would I don't know how that would be manageable. I understand the sentiment where he's coming from. But we do have to balance, and I said it before the caller, you know, we're not just going to arrest our way out of it. But there is an incapacitation aspect. There's a responsibility aspect. There's accountability for what they've done, and particularly the people that come back again and again and again. You have to ratchet up the penalties and hope that gets their attention. And then do some of the other things, like I said, that maybe we could look at forfeiture. I really think that's something that'll get their attention. I know it would cause great controversy in Harrisburg and a lot of consternation, but I do think that's something that would absolutely work as far as deterrence. It's not going to eliminate all of it, but and the other thing we could do is get more serious about the driving on suspensions that we have here. There's just a lot of different things, and it's very complicated by what you're talking about, those addiction problems. One of the things that we do in Lancaster County that's been very successful is we have DUI Central Court, so it comes in much earlier in the system. I mean, if you've got somebody, an offender who's addicted, we need to get them to confront what they're doing right away so they can take the first steps to recovery to try to break that cycle of abuse. And the earlier we can do that in the process, the better chance they have, and, of course, the better chance for the community. So that's one thing that we try to front load, and we've had great success here in Lancaster County with ADA. Andy Gonzalez has really spearheaded that, and we've done it. But we do recognize that there's behavioral issues. We need to work with the defense, too, because the defense has to tell us what the problems are. We're not going to know it. All we're going to know is what the driving was, what the BAC is. Somebody, the defendant needs to come forward with his or her attorney and say, hey, he's facing this. We need to put him in this type of thing. What about a combination of jail and a rehab facility? But we're not going to know that as prosecutors unless the defense is willing to share that information with us. We're just going to know what his prior record is, if any, and what his BAC is and what the driving was there. We're not going to know the background. So some of it is working with everybody needs to come together to look at the greater goal of trying to reduce these numbers. So.
Kristen, I don't know whether you could answer this or not. I know you've done a lot of research, mm-hmm. but a caller wanted to know what the other states, we've mentioned Pennsylvania, one of four states without, the other states that have weak drunk driving laws.
Well, the felony, the one that I can, off the top of my head, is New Jersey, Maryland, and Maine. We're the four states that does not have a DUI felony. The last state that changed was Colorado. That was about 2 years ago, I believe.
And Colorado, where marijuana was made.
Yes.
We had another caller who made that point.
Yes.
That a lot of states legalizing marijuana now for recreational use. So there probably will be a lot of other DUI cases. Craig Stedman, something that we have heard, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, how complicated it is to prosecute a DUI case. Something that we often hear, the resolution of DUIs, is that they have been pled down, that the people refer to them as plea bargains. And I've heard prosecutors say, it's no bargain to go to jail for such, but a plea agreement. So does that still happen, and why?
Yes. Our system's really built around plea bargains. We prosecute 6,500 cases a year. I have 28 and a half one part-time prosecutors to handle 6,500 cases a year. If everyone went to trial, we just couldn't do it. So the only way to deal with that is we'd have to increase the court administration, the judges' number, as well as my staff. So if we don't have plea bargains, we would not be able to do our jobs. Of course, people have to be tried within 6 months if they're in jail, and within a year if they're not in jail. So we have a clock that's ticking on us from the beginning. So, and that's across the state. I mean, most cases in Pennsylvania, most cases in the country are resolved by plea bargains. There's a couple counties where they have different policies, and everybody has their different priorities. You know, for me, one of our priorities is certainly particularly the repeat offender DUIs. I'm all about giving people second chances, but if we've seen their name before, particularly for the same offense and something as dangerous as DUI, you know, that's what we look for. But still, we have to balance what we can prove. Can we prove these facts? You know, what do we have here? What are the issues? And there's always some type of issues. And what's always, you know, paramount for us too is when you have a victim and or surviving family like the Demcos, we try to work very closely with them to see what their wishes are. If we're going to negotiate something, we want to make sure they're on board with it and help them make an informed decision as to how to proceed. And you know, we worked very closely with the Demcos in their case, and we do that with everybody. You can't always give them what they want. We can never give them really what they want, which is a time machine to make it not happen. But you try to make the best resolution, balancing all the factors, including the rights of the defendant, and making sure that the laws are followed. But you have to have plea bargains, or the system just wouldn't work.
We only have about 2 minutes left, and as we come to the end of the program, I'm curious, Susan and Chris, what would you like to see happen? I mean, you have been very successful in your campaigns to getting some of these laws changed, but how far more, or what, I guess we should, I should ask, what are you looking for ultimately?
Well, initially, right now, we really do want Senate Bill 961 to pass. We do need stricter penalties. And we need to be able to go when we talk to these people, as Chris does, to say, you already had one DUI, the next DUI, that you're going to have a bigger problem on your hands. We need to get that across.
Chris, you actually talked to...
Well, yeah, like some of the families in our group, and there's a lot of... And, you know, it's just not us at PAP. There's a lot of families across the Commonwealth, unfortunately, yeah. Some of us will talk you to the VIP, which is a required class of all offenders, or Alcohol Highway Safety School. And the message is, please, you know, learn from this. Don't let these bad things happen.
Right. And we would just really want to urge all the people in the House to look into my eyes and tell me, why can you not pass Senate Bill 961?
Have you said that to a legislator?
No, but I would like to. I mean, we do go up to Harrisburg, and again, we talk to these people, and they do want to do good for our Commonwealth. So if anyone in their heart says, I can't pass this session, come see me and look into my eyes.
Chris and Susan Demko, thank you very much for being with us
today.
Thank you. Lancaster County District Attorney Craig Stedman. Craig, thank you for being with us, too.
Yeah, sure.
And it's Senate Bill 961 is what we've been discussing today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about, games of chance, that there are a lot of establishments in Pennsylvania that the legislature was counting on money from these establishments that would be picking up games of chance. They haven't done it. And that's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in.